This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 140, Spreading Ayurveda Through Music, an interview with Jack Stafford, Ayurvedic troubadour. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast this morning. We are so privileged today to have a special guest and a new friend of mine and soon to be yours, Jack Stafford, with us today. Jack, do you want to give a shout out? And then I'm going to let him know who you are.
Hello, Heather. It's wonderful to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, and as you can see, Jack's got a beautiful accent. So we'll talk a little bit about what his background is because he is currently living in Italy, but he is from Great Britain, from England. So I want to know more about that. But Jack is an Ayurvedic troubadour. And for those of you who are thinking, what is that? You were going to learn all about that. But Jack actually creates, writes, produces, and publishes songs about Ayurveda to help to educate people. And they are so fun. I must tell you, they're very fun to listen to, very educational, but you're sneaky learning because, you know, you're hearing a beautiful song at the same time. So Jack's got his own podcast as well called Pod Songs. And we'll get into that because I want you to explain kind of the inception of that and how that kind of paralleled with the world changes of the last few years. But that's really beautiful. He's an Ayurvedic practitioner and has also released an album of songs about the Ashtanga Hridayam. So that is Jack in a nutshell, and we're excited to talk with you today.
Well, we have 3 hours yet to go through everything.
Well, I think that, you know, we'll just do multiple, we'll do a mini series, the Jack Stafford mini series.
Yeah. Okay. Work. All right.
Like that. So Jack, just the word troubadour, and I could be saying it completely improperly, so I'll let you grace us if I've messed it up, but
well, I think it's a French word, troubadour.
Okay. Oh, yeah. You said that. Very nice. I like that. Living in Italy from Great Britain, speaking with a French, you know, twist. I like it. I'm just boring vanilla America. So we got that going on. But Jack, tell me just a little bit about your story. Let's just chat about that. I want to see how this all came to be because this is new. Ooh. I'd never heard of this before.
Well, I've cornered the market in Ayurvedic troubadours, that's for sure.
Hey, you've created a totally blue ocean. I love it.
I have. Well, if there were many of them, I wouldn't need to do it, would I?
This is true. This is true. Unless you, of course, rose to the top as the creme de la creme that you are. So,
well, I guess it all began with Ayurveda way back when. It was 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, however many thousand years back. Because the Ayurveda is originally in sutras. Mm-hmm. So true. The doctors were poets. Who wrote the original ones. You didn't. If you're an Ayurveda doctor like you, you wouldn't just, if you did come up with a new cure, I'm just saying here, I have no idea how they came up with it. I don't know if it was channeled or I'm just shooting the breeze here. But you come up with a sutra which encapsulates all of the conditions for making the medicine, diagnosing the disease, when to treat it, how to treat it, any exclusions. It's all in there because Sanskrit is one word in Sanskrit is a book in English. So they would make it from that. And then they could remember it because it rhymes and it's in meter. So it's easy to remember and they can pass it on to their children and to other doctors. Instead of sending an email, they would, hey, I've got this new medicine for you. I've got this treatment for you. And they would remember the whole canon of the medical book. Which is incredible because, you know, these days the doctors, we can dig into Western medicine here. And one of the criticisms is that it changes all the time and they're having new medicines come along. So basically they're a lot of their work is as pharmacists. I'm sure mm-hmm. I'm preaching to the, what do you call it? The chapel or the?
The choir, preaching to the choir.
Why but do you know, preach to the choir and then not to the, I guess because I the choir's because- there.
They're there. They're already like, you know, they already drank the Kool-Aid so to speak. Right. They're already supporting what you're up to. They're kind of behind you, supporting you. So you're going to turn around and preach to them instead of the congregation.
Oh, like backing singers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe like that. Well, I think that that's true, but I find that people come to Ayurvedic medicine and think that we're pharmacologists as well. Mm. And they just want to know the herbal pharmacy to treat their ailments.
Oh, that's very true. Yeah.
So I think Yeah, even
it's
the
this
people
materialistic
who are
prison. Yeah, yeah. Also because of the big brands like Himalaya and all the other,
yeah.
You know, they try and market Ayurveda as well, and also the spas. You know, you even go for your branded Panchakarma. So we can take pot shots at everyone here on this show. Everyone's up for it.
Well, and I'm a massage therapist, so as you know, one of my other hats, and we do Ayurvedic massage. But I also think, yeah, there's a traditional way to do Ayurvedic massage, but we don't have the market on that. You can do Abhyanga at home and do Ayurvedic massage in a different way. So no, I totally agree with that. But I love that idea of the sutras. And I think people who are familiar with the Yoga Sutras maybe don't understand that Ayurveda developed in that same way. And it makes sense. How else would you remember? I mean, the Karaka Samhiti is, and for those of you listening,
you say that very well. You say that much better than me.
Thank you very much. But that ancient text that's a compilation of all of the Ayurvedic teachings, it's volumes long. There's so much in that. And having read a lot of that, the English translation, I'm assuming the Sanskrit would have been a little more melodic because it definitely doesn't come with that translation into English. It's not as beautifully read.
I did try to learn some. They're on YouTube, as everything is on YouTube these days. There are some sutras and they are very poetic in Sanskrit. Yeah, I can recommend checking them out. But I only targeted, because the good thing about Ishtangaridhi, which it's a masterpiece. I mean, it's incredible. So it's written in reverse order of importance. So everything, if you just read the first stanzas, first sutras, those are the most important ones. The first chapter is the most important one, the first section. So I really just concentrate with my songs on the very, very beginning, the introductions, the dinacharya, the daily routine. I didn't go into deep down diagnosis of, you know, how to treat piles or things like that, how to administer an enema. These are not things that I had time to go into, because I only had 12 songs. So I kept it to the essentials.
Well, and I must tell you, for most clients coming in, those are not the first things I lead with either. So I think we're okay. We tend to lead with dinacharya, routines, you know, cutting down on the excess, the motion in their lives, creating more stability. So,
yeah.
So how did you decide to sing? So you're a musician first, and then you became a practitioner of Ayurveda, yes?
Yes, but I came to Ayurveda like many people do, because I was delegating my health choices, as many people do. I was committing that sin, and I looked for Western medicine and then for Chinese medicine and Ayurveda. I thought I could go to a therapist like you and they would, you know, I could go back to living my life the way I was before, as long as I was seeing you once a week. So that's another cardinal sin. But yeah, so I did delegate my health, but finally I learned through Ayurveda that's the wrong approach, that you take responsibility for your health. 80% of diseases can be cured without a doctor. It says that in the sutras, and just purely because most diseases are lifestyle diseases, fix your lifestyle, all those health issues disappear. You don't need to take pills to the ad infinitum. So yeah, that's how I came for it. Now, yeah, I was a singer before. And I came to Ayurveda as a patient, and then as a practitioner, and then finally as a troubadour.
I think that's a beautiful progression, though, because we understand where people are coming from when we've been in the trenches. And I don't think you ever fully get out of the trenches, at least in my experience. It's cyclical almost, meaning you might find balance in one area, but if you are not mindful and continue with that, or if you get complacent and think, oh, I have cured myself from the Western ills of the society and lifestyle, and then you slip back into some of those old behaviors again, you can find that you've I don't want to say relapse, but it's really easy to go back into some of those bad habits. I sometimes think it's harder to create good habits than it is to go back into the bad habits. So that's where I think those appointments help with practitioners, is to kind of keep you on track, but you have to do the work 100%. I mean, you've got to take the time outside of that. I don't know that it's hard though. Do you feel like Ayurveda is hard?
No, it helps talking about it like this, doing podcast interviews. Great, because I did study to be a practitioner, but I didn't have the patience for patients. I don't know how you can do it, because
it's hard.
Yeah, because I thought exactly what as you did, that I've been down the road, so I'm going to be able to help guide people in the direction, but realize that I have very little patience when I know something, I have trouble. I lose my empathy for people who don't, because it's obvious to me now. All these little things, you know, if you've got a cold and you're eating yogurt, you know, I used to do that, but now I think that's so stupid and so obvious just because I know it, which is a very bad behavior of me. I do try and catch myself not to be so judgmental, but just so, because once I've done this practitioner course, it feels like that should have been in primary school. No, it shouldn't have been a practitioner so that you can help others. It should just be so you can just keep yourself out of A&R.
Yeah. When I think a lot of people go through Ayurvedic medicine study for that reason, because they're trying to figure themselves out, whether they ever see a patient or not. And I see less patients now than I used to, not because I lack the patience to see the patient, but I just have gone so many different directions with it. But I do love that interaction. I feel like I always learn from people and understand more deeply how our doshic tendencies influence our ability to make change. Because that's huge, right? That inability to have the empathy, like you were saying, like when my pitch arises and I feel that and I'm thinking, I told you what to do 4 appointments ago and I'm not seeing changes because you're not doing the work and you're upset that you're not seeing results from this long-term, you know, maybe cough that you've had or something and I can't get you to do it. It's really difficult. But then I also see this is their journey and I'm just the guide for them in this little piece of their journey. And so really taking back the ownership that it has nothing to do with me when they leave the office, it's all about them. So as long as I've given my 100% to be there and show up for them in that session or that time, that then they get to go and take that wisdom and they just might not be ready for it. But that's why I think your singing is amazing, because I think it can help people who aren't maybe ready yet to take the plunge, but they can see, I can learn something here that's interesting. So when did you start singing about Ayurveda? I mean, I just think this is so fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of your gateway drug. So people can take me and then they can go get into the heavier stuff. But like you, I'm drawn towards the vacuum. I live in Italy, so I don't speak great Italian, and I don't have such a great, I'm in the countryside and the people are they're 20 years behind, so maybe if I was in a big city I'd do that, but I'm kind of drawn towards the vacuum. So I got into the singing because it would help me remember, you know, now from my song about Ayurveda I can remember that Vata is dry and light, rough to the touch, cold as ice, subtle and clear and can't stop moving around, just because that's the chorus to the song. And I can remember 400 songs. I can't remember textbooks and things like that. So I did it all. I'm doing all everything for purely selfish reasons, and that it helps me. And then inadvertently it kind of helps other people.
Well, I think we all do things ultimately from an egoic state and we're trying to then, you know, expand beyond that. So it's all good.
Justify afterwards that we're altruistic all along.
Oh my goodness, I love that. The authenticity is beautiful. So your Pod Songs podcast is interview-based, but music. So how are you incorporating that and how'd that come about? Because you started this podcast during COVID, yes?
Yeah, exactly. Well, so I did the kind of a body, mind, spirit trilogy of albums. So body was obviously Ayurveda. And I find that in life, in this classroom we call Earth, that once you learn something, then the universe pushes you up a level and pushes you on a class. And yes, people stay there and if they're developing it in the right way, but I obviously, my higher self or forces unknown said that I should move on. And so I did the body, and then I did the mind. You know, I needed to fix that because I was, you know, I was pretty crazy mentally.
From an Ayurvedic standpoint, let's take off the crazy. Were you Vata imbalanced or would you have, Okay.
Vata.
Yeah. We see that majority of patients in the mind, right? They have those Vata imbalances.
I guess we don't see the Kapha patients because they're not that they're imbalanced. They're just on the couch. They can't be bothered.
It's too much work to make the change. Well, it's funny that you say that because in all the courses that I do, I think that there's maybe 15% Kapha and then a lot of pittas and a ton of Vata imbalance. So it's just interesting. I know we need to do an outreach to these closet kaphas who need us.
Well, I tried to. I went to all these yoga festivals, but like I said, like you said, they're all the kaphas stayed at home. Mm-hmm. So I did a tour of it because I had this album of Ayurveda songs. So I went to yoga festivals. And, you know, you've been to many, I'm sure. There's the calendar of events you can pick who to go to. You have a yoga class and vinyasa flow and everything. And then I was slotted in there in one of the classrooms in every festival. And that was fantastic. But I only did that for a very short time because I was pushed on to other things, as I said. And so I did the mind because I was also doing Vipassana meditation. And I got into the Buddhism. And so I was doing more spiritual. And sorry, doing more trying to fix the mind. And then that's at a manageable level now. Let's not pretend that I'm any Eckhart Tolle or anything like that. But the monkey is on a lead. Let's put it that way.
That's good.
He's not in the box, but he's not allowed to stray too far. So then I moved on to the spirit, and then because I was in India, I was having an Ayurvedic treatment there. I found an amazing Ayurvedic doctor. Because, you know, I've been to India a few times, and you want the real deal, don't you? You know, you want to go to the man.
Yeah.
So I've been to Varkala, I mean, a lot in Kerala, found a lot of spas, you know, that you get a Panchakarma. And it's great. I mean, actually looking back, I think because of what we said with the mind, that most people are causing their illness through a mental imbalance, actually going for 3 weeks or 4 weeks and just going through a simple program like that. I used to be very against them, but I'm actually thinking now that's not such a bad thing. And having just that relaxation time, just going through the therapies and getting a break from your routine and yourself is an amazing thing. So yeah, I would like to go and do some more of them, but I did find an amazing doctor in my search, and he went to Chennai. Madras, so you still sit there. He's fantastic. I mean, he came from the guru. He had a guru, and he was also in the lineage of the family. So he had those two things.
Oh, that's beautiful. Because then it's almost like baked into his DNA as far as the way that he is and lives. That's beautiful.
Oh yeah, I mean, he grew up scrubbing the tables. So when he gets doctors come to him now, they graduate school, and he puts them cleaning the tables, which is just. So he keeps losing doctors to assistants. So he's just working on his own. And so he does the treatments himself, which is very rare for a doctor. They always have technicians to do it because you do it. It's a difficult job, no? I mean, the oils seep into your hands. It's
in every part of your life, really, when you do the treatments. It's hard to escape from it, which isn't a bad thing, but it becomes a little excessive, especially I have a lot of kapha in my constitution. So sometimes it becomes too much for me. It's too heavy. So I have to kind of cut back on the amount of therapies that I do just for that reason. But I love that you got to work with him and experience that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, well, I was a patient. So I got a treatment I took my mother-in-law originally. For diabetes, because he is a specialist in diabetes as well, specialist in many things. He has a special pulse diagnosis. So because as you know, I'm sure your listeners know, you can tell everything from the pulse, what you had for breakfast 3 weeks ago, you know, who your grandmother was, everything. And
so I don't think I'm there quite yet. I'm still working on that.
So a good way to explain it on a podcast, because not visual, is that, you know, when you play the trumpet with three fingers, so you have these different shapes to make the chords and the notes. And that's what you do with his technique, with a pulse diagnosis, with the organ diagnosis. So he does these different shapes to check your organs, you know. So instead of instead of needing an x-ray, or what's the other one there, you put you in a tube and
MRI.
Yeah, so he whips around the body just by feeling your wrist. Because he feels it on either side of the finger, if it slips through like a snake, or if it jumps like a
frog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's got these secret shapes, and it's you have to practice a lot. I mean, I've tried to learn pulse diagnosis, but I didn't have the patience as well. So it's very, you have to practice on yourself every morning, and I keep forgetting.
It's actually good meditation too. When I have clients that are really high vata anxiety, is I'll have them sit and hold the pulse just close to the heart, and just tune into the pulse and that movement, and close the eyes, breathe into it, because it brings you back into the present moment of awareness. instead of scattered everywhere. So it's something when I have a client come in and they're feeling high anxiety and I can tell that they're going to have a hard time in the session, we'll start with that. We'll take 5 minutes or so and just breathe. And you're not trying to identify anything. You're just being with yourself. Yeah.
I guess if you just spend enough time with your hands on your wrist like that, you get into it. And someone else, another Ayurvedic doctor told me that you had to hold your breath. You get more sensitivity then. Have you noticed that?
Well, and you'll notice a shift in your, depending on how air moves in your own body, when you breathe and you're holding your pulse, you'll notice that it affects the flow, the intensity of the pulse. So it can give you a little bit of a, I wouldn't say misdiagnosis, but it does help you to see how air moves within you, but it can give you a belief that you have a little more vata than maybe you actually have going on.
I'm feeling it all under the first finger now, the pulse.
Mm-hmm. And so for those of you listening, I've done a podcast about pulse diagnosis, but each finger is more attuned to different doshic imbalances or just the different dosha within the prakriti as well, depending on the intensity of how you're pushing. So there's lots that we can study with pulse. I think it's a beautiful thing, but you do have to practice it a lot and see a lot of people. So during COVID, none of us could like touch each other and we weren't in the same space. So, got a little out of practice there during that year or so when everything was virtual, but
yeah. If you practice on yourself just every day, that's a great thing about coming on your show. Now talking about Ayurveda, this is something I'm going to try and pick up again. You inspired me. Thanks.
Well, thank you. There we go. So you started doing these festivals and you were traveling about, and then you decided that wasn't the way to go. Is that the inception of when you came out with the podcast? How did that come to be?
Well, to carry on. So I'm still in India. So I have my pulse felt, and this guy, he can see, he knows your mind straight away. I mean, he can tell, how do you do anything? He said to me, which was very rude of him.
Don't you hate it when people can see right into you in moments? Yeah. It's disconcerting a little bit. You feel like you've hidden so well behind your barriers that you're exposed completely.
Because I have all these cracks on my tongue from all the traveling. Because I did 2 years on the road. I was doing house concerts everywhere. I was playing in, I just rock up into a town and play in people's living rooms in return for a place to sleep. And that was very imbalancing for 200, I did about 700 shows in 2 years and different foods, different temperatures. And that's something I realized tremendously how temperature changes affect you dramatically in season to season. That's why airplane travel is something you should never do. And go with the season.
People who travel a lot and don't understand why they're having all these health ailments, you tell them it's because of their excess travel and they just, they don't want to listen to that because they don't want to change that lifestyle. Mm. And you see this, it ages people incredibly fast when they travel a lot. So you decided this was unbalancing for you. He said, how are you even doing anything? That is pretty funny that he said that.
Yeah. But he gave me this treatment, which is amazing. So he makes the oils himself. Is very obviously in a secret way, and he puts so much prana in them that if he puts them on your body straight away, you'd collapse. It takes 2 weeks of preparation massage to get you. I was there for 2 months, so this was an expensive treatment. So because he does it by himself and he treats a few people, and he treats he's a doctor and he treats you himself, so he can feel where the energy's blocked, and he's moving things, and I'm sure he's sending through energy as well on a through the subtle vibrations and things like that. So this is top level stuff. And so one thing I noticed is because I was doing a little bit of pranayama there, and I was breathing, counting in my in breaths, counting in my out breaths before, and I'm quite good now. I mean, I can do 30 in, 30 out, sometimes 40 in, 40 out. So that's 40 seconds, you're counting on your pulse. But then I could breathe in when I had all these oils, I could breathe in for 90 seconds and then breathe out for 90 seconds. So that's one breath every 3 minutes.
But it wasn't as though you were holding your breath. There was activity of either the inhale or the exhale going through that, or were you pausing between the
inhale and exhale? It was just like the breath felt like a very fine thread going into my nose and trickling down. So it's like a very very beautiful experience. And I wasn't too new into pranayama. Now, if I did, I know more about it now, I would have done some breath holds, and I could have really, you know, oh, wow, that was a bit amazing opportunity. If I'd, I could have seen some shit then, I'm sure I could have braced. But but anyway, so this was part of my journey. Obviously, I wasn't ready then, and I would have blown my top. But
a little bit too much rising energy for that.
Oh yeah, for a Vata, this is just so. Because I had to eat regularly. Actually, he told me I had to be very stable because, you know, he's pumping in the prana through these oils, and it's, you know, it sucks. These things suck toxins out of the bone.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the treatment, you can see the toxins in the bottom of the bowl. So it's,
oh wow.
It's incredible. So I started waking up every night at 3:33 every night. You know, I'd go to the bathroom sometimes. I'd come back, look at the clock, 3:33, or I'd wait, roll over, it's 3:33. So I was having a big synchronicity. And I Googled that because, you know, that's weird. You Google it on YouTube. I found some videos and they say it's, you know, it's an angel number, or it's your higher self contacting, or it could be a spirit guide, or nobody knows. But it said, look for synchronicities in the daytime, see if you're getting other messages. So I started seeing Kundalini everywhere. You know, I was staying behind a Kundalini center that had been there for a month and I didn't know. And then someone else mentioned Kundalini, and then the doctor, he said, read the Serpent Power if you want to know more. Because he was also, he'd been into the dark arts a little bit. He was, you know, with all he knew, you can contact things and you can perform feats. You know, I mean, if they want to live for centuries, they can do things like that. And so he did experiment, I think, and he stopped doing that. But he said, read the Serpent Power. And that's a very complicated Sanskrit book. That's a real, have you heard of it?
I haven't heard of it. I'm going to have to note that one.
Yeah, it was translated from ancient texts by an Englishman who was over there with the British Empire way back when. And it's Sanskrit translated into Victorian English. So it's impenetrable.
Heavy read. Oh my goodness. You need to have all your faculties about you when you're studying that.
So I went back to Mr. YouTube and I asked him what he thought. And he said, he gave me, so the result that came up was this guy in Miami who goes through it, the book in a electrics class series. And he's has a well-thumbed copy of 30 years. And as I found out that he's been studying it. So for 30 years, since he was 3 years old, he started doing mantra and pranayama, and so he's in a yogic family.
A blessing for that child. Can you imagine if all kids grew up that way, how much more light and just energy this world would have? That'd be so beautiful. We should start that movement too.
there are these pockets of people, you know, who know each other, and there are yogis all around the world, but they don't publicize it because they're way ahead of us. So a truth told, I heard this from an ascended master in one lecture. It said, a truth told too soon can be as useless as a truth told too late.
I believe that, even from biblical teaching, you know, you don't cast pearls before swine. Not that we're swine, but we're definitely not maybe at a level to absorb and use the information. So it's useless.
Exactly. So we have to do, you know, we have to do the basics, and then we'll get it. We'll get the teacher. When you're ready, the teacher will appear. So I got a teacher. So there's me in India. I'm expecting Sadhguru or someone in nice robes. Or I want someone authentic, and I'm getting this big, looks like a quarterback from from
NFL football guy.
Yeah, but he's a huge, big, tough guy, and he's going through it, and it's super complex stuff. But he goes, you know, he really explains how, you know, Shiva, and they were all, you know, the nadis, and he, you know, does it in a. And then, so he goes through his class, and then he'll drops in little asides, you know, as I was projecting the other day, and I was leaving my body, and this guy spoke to me, and you know, this is like, because I had a very atheist upbringing. I'm very, I'm a skeptic. So.
Okay. You're probably the perfect one to listen to that, because you can analyze it from a real point of view that you're not already bought in. Right? You can kind of go, huh, do I believe this? Is this real? Is this not? Let's test it. Right? So there's that's not a bad thing.
So he the way he, because he's quite not boring, but he's very methodical. He's very academic. So, and then when he drops these things in, he takes you further into his world. You know, you kind of sink in there. Mm-hmm. And here, anyway, his master is Dr. George King, who is a Western master of yoga. So this is his master. So there's me in England learning about via an American about a Western master of yoga in England in the 1950s, who did 8 hours a day practices for 10 years in London, you know, as well as holding down a full-time job. So he would sleep a couple of hours. They don't sleep very long, these yogis. Because when you're doing that much pranayama, that much mantra, that much prayer, you're on another vibration. So, so he raised Kundalini up, which I've now learned is a big thing. All the way up to the crown chakra, and he became beyond an adept. He was a master, and he was also a Mahabodhisattva, which is somebody who's come to this earth to do a mission and give teachings. So if I'd heard that now on a podcast talking to you, I would not. So I landed on this island in a very gradual. Very gradual approach, which I can't hope to explain to your listeners in a way that, because everyone needs a different flight approach pattern to truth, because we all have these, our conscious mind has all these barriers and all these prejudices, and you know, you can't fill a glass half full. It's like, even if I explain this to a yoga master in India, they wouldn't accept it, because everyone has or the theosophists or the Rosicrucians, or they all have their own preconceived plans. So Dr. King, he couldn't go into one of these other spiritual organizations who you think would obviously, if you have important teachings, you know, go to the Pope. You know, that's what my girlfriend's always telling me. Why didn't he go to the Pope?
He would have been thrown out. You have to have the right audience that's prepared. There's got to have been enough seeds that are planted throughout that person's experience, and even through their ancestral experience, for them to come to a place to understand and learn that.
Exactly. So this is so the teachings of Dr. King, it's like ancient aliens. It's that UFOs have been, and it turns out all the yogis, and it's all in the ancient sutras. Well, I was speaking to Robert Svoboda.
Oh yes.
And I had him on my podcast, and I told him we were discussing the other planets, and he said that yes, he knows all the other planets are inhabited at different frequencies for some vibration. It's in all the Vedic texts, but it's all coded. They say it different. Mm-hmm. I forget the word he uses, or logi or something. So he knows all that, but it's in, and it's, you know, the Star of Bethlehem was a UFO, and I'm kind of sounding a bit wacky now, but
but you know, yeah. It's interesting, because you see such parallels of truth and teaching between different dogmas and different understandings, because we're all explaining it in a way that makes sense from our view and our lens. Mm-hmm. And Ayurveda is the same. And so these teachers like King have had experiences throughout their life that have put them in a way to explain it the way that they're seeing it. And I think there's truth in all of it. It's just, how are we using language to express that?
Oh yeah, exactly. And yeah, and it's really, I see it now, and it is, the Bible is a UFO book. And so he channeled these higher teachings, and it's because he founded the Aetherius Society. So because as I've learned from the yogic teachings, is that when we die, we go to another plane of existence, but it's right here in this room. Mm-hmm. We're just at a different frequency of vibration. So the astral plane is right here in this room. Each chakra is a different plane of existence. So there's six above the root chakra and four below, and we go to the realm of just desserts, and we live there. And so that, you know, it's the electromagnetic spectrum, is all these different frequencies of light and sound, which sound creates physicality and vibration. And so all the other planets are inhabited, but at different vibrations. That's how UFOs can blink in and out of existence. And so it connects this reincarnation with this, the UFOs. So he channeled these great teachings from other, because he could raise Kundalini, and then he spoke as the masters from Venus and Mars. And so he founded the Aetherius Society, and it's got now a couple of thousand members. It's tiny. It's absolutely, it's, you know, this, nobody's heard of it. So because he wasn't here, he had all these missions to do. He sends, so the Aetherius Society performs all these missions to, it sends money, it sends energy through psychic centers of the earth, because the Mother Earth is a living being. Mm-hmm. So it has these missions to send, it puts prayer power into a battery, which is filled with crystals. So you send a spiritual energy, like, you know, if you're doing Reiki, you send it out through the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do it the same. It's that prayer and spiritual healing are the same thing. And you put it into a battery, and then they release it through these spiritual energy radiators, and they send it to the Devic forces and to the Mother Earth, and to, whenever there's a crisis, they release this energy. So they're like a spiritual commando force.
Yeah. Kind of channeling that in. That is so interesting to take all of the physical understandings that we have and then look at it as though we're only seeing this one piece of it. And that idea that there's a lot of different frequencies and that we're not seeing it. And it's not something that I'm as familiar with, but it's so interesting to hear you share about it. As, yeah. And it is, I mean, it is a little bit out there. I'm doing quotes for those of you listening. It's a little out there because we're so focused on the physical and what we can see, touch, feel, and sense here. Yeah. And most of us can't even master that part. So the thought of having to understand something even bigger and that's beyond our ability to see is kind of mind blowing a little bit, right? We're like, yeah. I don't know. So I want you to, when we're done, I'll have you give me some contact info, just some information if people are interested in that. We can add that in the show notes and they can kind of delve into it. I think that would be good. But I did want to swing a little back unless you have more you want to share.
Can we come down from that? I mean,
we're going to come down. I think we might be a little etheric. For those of you listening, you're like,
a little breathing exercise here.
I know. Let's take a breath, everybody. Deep breath in. Grounding, exhale.
Okay. Okay. I can come down.
Are you down? Are you back?
I'm down.
Okay. This is good. Jack's here with us. He's left Venus. He's arrived back on the planet Earth. So I want to know more about pod songs. Like, I really am curious how you decided to start, because you said you wanted to focus on mind, body, and soul. So were you bringing in people that are in different areas of those spectrums to be able to discuss ideas, you know, like what we were just talking about? But then you're making songs about them. That's what I think is compelling. So tell me how that works.
Well, I mean, how lucky was I to get an idea? I mean, of all the musicians in the world, all the podcasts in the world, nobody's done this yet. When I started it, writing songs about people, because that's what I'm doing. I'm a troubadour. I meet people. I write songs. I've written, you know, hundreds of songs as I was traveling around. And so I came back to England after my semi-awakening. And after getting into the Aetherius Society, I said, I've been pissing around, you know, because I've done the Ayurveda album, and I'm a creative, you know, I'm quite happy to make it and then move on to the next thing. I think it's so amazing. Songs are so amazing. I should not be sullying my hands by having to promote them. They should just take flight on their own.
If that were only the case, right? Create it and it will just do its own thing, but you got to give it wings.
In the age of Spotify, when I think it's 40,000 songs released a day or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I come from a background as a copywriter and I worked in marketing. So if I can't think of the best idea, nobody can, because I have these unique skills. So I must promote the Aetherius Society. I must come up with an amazing idea here. Mm-hmm. So I asked my higher self, and I think found you've advanced, because not that you find answers, but you ask the right questions. So I started asking myself, how can I be the number one musician of the world, or the number one podcaster? And I came up with pod songs. So I interview famous people, which is what all the top podcasters do. You know, Joe Rogan, they speak to famous people and it makes you famous. So, but I will write a song about them, which no one's doing, because that's what I do. If I'm having a podcast, because I was using podcast interviews to publicize my my album about the mind, the middle one in the trilogy, which I'd finished. And so I love doing podcasts. I love talking about myself. It's fantastic.
Don't we all? That's like the, you know, platform. Give us the platform and everybody's very happy to share.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I can get more of this, and I can interview other people. So I found the contact details of all the people who've been on the top podcasts and wrote to them, and they were very flattered. Surprisingly, mm-hmm. famous people replied to me and said yes, because nobody had ever offered to write a song about them.
I told my husband what we were doing, who I was interviewing this morning, and kind of just like the snippet about you. And he goes, oh, you write songs about people? He goes, that's so cool. He's like, he should write a song about me. I was like, okay, whatever. But you know, I think that that is very flattering. People think that's pretty special. Who does that? Nobody does that. You do that.
I get that a lot. And actually my podcast agent, he said, what's amazing, what's ordinary to you is amazing to other people. Mm-hmm. Like writing a song for me, I do that over breakfast. It's not really that amazing but for other people, that's fascinating. So that's what I do. And so now I've done 100 episodes in my first year, which I went some, you know, because I'm on a mission for God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And now I've just reached that milestone. And now I'm switching over to being, Podsongs 2.0 is the music. I get guest musicians on to come and do the song, because so I get famous musicians to come on and interview famous people. So double my bang for my buck, as you Americans would say.
Yeah. So are you still being on those episodes, or are you just linking together musicians and others to?
Yeah. I'm the host of the host. So I interview the musician for 15 minutes, and then they come on and interview their guest, their hero. Who, because also the Aetherius Society, the motto is Karma Yoga. This is the yoga of the age mm-hmm. today. It's service to others. Mm-hmm. Service is the jewel and the rock of the attainment is the motto of the society. So I interview people in service to others, and I serve the servers. I write a song to promote them. So I try to interview campaigners, activists. So I've done songs for famous dietitians about children's eating habits, you know, mm-hmm. or air pollution, many issues, because it's fantastic today. There's so many crises, so many issues and campaigners. It's just a gold mine out there. So,
I just started laughing because the way you said that, it's just fantastic. There's so many issues. You know, I think there's as many issues as there's always been. We're just so much more aware of them now, and we're creating them at a more rapid speed as well.
Yeah. So it's all, and all these musicians have, I mean, some of them are not into protest songs. Some of them are like, some of them want to, vintage clothing, as you call it in America, recycled clothing. So they mm-hmm. want to promote that. So we're going to interview someone who's made an app to sell recycled clothes, and we'll just promote it. They choose a guest. So if the musician chooses the guest because I want them to be passionate, if they're for suicide prevention, I mean, you saw how that telephone number song by the artist, I forget his name, but you know, it really can make a difference. There aren't enough protest songs. So that's what I'm focused on. And that's where I'm going with it. So musicians interviewing
I love heroes. It. And you're doing a couple episodes a week then, if you're hitting 100 a year. So that is keeping you quite busy.
Well, I launched with 5, and then I was doing 3 a week. Then I went down to 2 a week, and then 1 a week, and it averaged. I hit 100 after 12 and a half months. Yeah.
Are you calling?
I'm kicking back a bit now. Focusing more on promotion.
Well, you know, you got to create, but you also got to give time to give it wings so we can all find it. Are you calling this second version Podsongs 2, or is it still going to be housed under Podsongs?
No, it's still Podsongs. Yes. Yeah, okay. My fun name. Yeah.
Your fun name. I love that. I love it. And so as far as your life right now, do you feel like you have found more balance?
Well, yeah, I need a project. I need to work on something. So yes, definitely. Yeah. We're also expecting a child. So if things coming at one time.
Oh, that's exciting. Look at that creative energy all over the place. Yeah. I love that. Do you know if you're having a girl or a boy?
It's a little boy, yeah.
It's a little boy. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm excited for you. That's going to kind of create a little bit of vata in your life for a bit.
Well, I hope it could be grounding as well, because both my girlfriend and I are very vata. So we want to, having to, some externalizing our attention and focusing on someone else is going to be a great mode of service, I feel.
That'll be beautiful. And what's lovely, does she study and practice Ayurveda as well?
No, but she's very into it. And we took her mother to India for the Ayurvedic treatment, and that helped a lot as well. And yeah, she's a fan of everything I do, but she watches from the sidelines.
Mm. There's so many beautiful Ayurvedic treatments for postpartum, just immediately following birth, and that can really help with a lot of that vata accumulation and excess that happens when you actually give birth and you have that vacuum of space and energy that's now left your body as a woman. And so there's a lot you can do to help avoid that rise, because you actually see a pretty big rise in vata following birth in women.
Do you have a podcast episode on it?
I'm going to have to look and see if I have one that covers it in depth. If not, I'll just make one for you. When is she due?
My own personal.
I will make a podcast in honor of Jack Stafford and his new baby that's coming.
Oh my God. He's due in May. So you have to.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. All right. I'll just do one for you that talks through how to treat the mother and the baby postpartum. Because I mean, I have four children, and having not understood and lived Ayurveda at that time, I see now the benefits that would have brought into my life if I'd understood some of those things after I had the babies. Because it can be a really challenging space for everyone involved, but especially the mom and the energy that it affects her when she actually gives birth. It's beautiful, but if you even physically, I mean, you think about that vacuum that's created, we definitely want to deal with that in a beautiful way.
I won't spoil it for the listener. I want to hear and go depth. I remember Dr. King said that a woman is never is on the doorsteps of adeptship. She can raise Kundalini at that moment because Kundalini gives birth. Mm. So if you wanted to become an adept, that's a good time to do it when you're giving birth.
There is nothing like that experience, I will tell you. And I think that women are a little bit lucky that we get to go through that. And I don't know that that's a Western viewpoint. Most people like to think of it as suffering, but I think it is probably the closest you come to spirit for sure. In those moments right before that baby is born, it's pretty much magic.
Because we're trying to avoid a hospital birth. How would you recommend to give birth? Because she's obviously worried about home birth. We don't have the good. We're in the south of Italy, about an hour away from a hospital. We don't have the Ayurvedic doctors to help us. So how would you recommend?
I worked with midwives. All of my births were with midwives, and three of them I did in hospital, but they were birthing centers. So no medical intervention was used. It was available if necessary, but I chose not to, medicate or anything. The last baby we actually did in a center that was just for natural birthing. And that we did it as a bathtub, actually. We did a water birth, which so beautiful. I mean, that whole experience was just amazing. But we did practice a lot of pranayama prior to. My husband and I would practice together, and to help him to coach me a little bit, to kind of be a guide for me when I was feeling ungrounded in the process. So having you educated about the experience that she's going to go through from a probably more of an Ayurvedic standpoint, but also just being able to breathe with her through it, teach her some practices that she can do.
Which breaths would you?
They weren't even traditional Ayurvedic practice breaths. It was more like focus breaths. So for example, and I'll explain this so that those of you who are listening can understand. So my husband would actually sit with his fist, like I'd be looking at his hand, right? And he would count the breaths with the raising of the fingers. And so it would be a in, and it was in the nose, exhale through the mouth, because I'm trying to release excess heat and the tension, right? So it'd be an in, and then he'd put up another finger and I'd blow out. And then he'd be an in with the lift of a finger, another finger out. And we would just go through that whole process. And we probably breathed like that for hours as we went through. And it was just slow and steady. And he would just stay there with me through that whole thing. So having him as kind of a tether, because you feel very etheric in that moment, because you're having so much go on with your body that you have a tendency to want to dissociate. So you need something to keep you really present when you're going through it, because you're the only one that can have this baby. So you can't step outside of your body in those moments. You have to fully feel what you're going through in order to actually give birth to the baby. But finding a really good midwife or a doula that can work with you. And then if you're nervous about medical needs, having the baby somewhere near a hospital where if you felt like you needed intervention, it's available to you. But that last one, we were probably 15 minutes or so from a hospital. Mm-hmm. And there was a doctor at that facility that it had an association with the midwife I was working with that knew we were having the baby, but I'd never met him. I didn't work with him at all. I did everything through my midwife practitioner, and oh, it was awesome. It was like the best. Yeah. Tell you what. So.
Well, we don't have centers like that around here, so we might have to, I might have a water birth, but I have to go to another city. But there's also this issue of COVID now, and I might be allowed in the room and things like that. So
there's so much that you can do ahead of time. Just don't go too early, because if you're able to work with her and breathe with her and be with her through the laboring process before she goes into delivery, there oftentimes with one of the babies, we went to the hospital, but we didn't actually go and check in until I was feeling like, okay, we're pretty close. And so we labored actually like in another space in the building, walked up and down the stairs, had my yoga ball, did all those things and was with him. And then when I actually finally said, okay, I think I'm feeling close to being ready.
Wow.
Then we checked in and the baby was born about half an hour later. So
what confidence though, I mean, that's.
But it starts now, right? In what she's doing right now and how you're helping her to feel confident as well in listening to what she's going through. She has the best coach ever. She has the best partner to do that through you. And it's
I'm too busy with my podcast.
Oh, no way. Are you kidding? That is way more important than the podcast. You got to put her in there. You guys need to do some meditations together, breath together every day to practice. Be beautiful.
Will you put this in the podcast as well, please? Because so the pre and the...
Yes, I'll put it all
the
in there.
The whole package. Okay,
yeah, because I've had quite a few mamas reach out that wanted to know a little bit more about care
for a whole download of your
everything that I know and everything I've learned too. So it's pretty good.
That's a podcast series.
There we go. I love it. Well, we've kind of had a journey today, haven't we? We've been up to this
in space and back.
I know. I feel like it's
birth
been good.
To death and all through the lives.
Feeling nice and grounded at this point. So I want people to be able to find you, Jack. How can they find you?
Just type in Pod Songs to any device nearby.
Any device nearby and you'll find it.
Probably the one you're listening to this podcast on.
Exactly. What's your favorite song they should start with that you've written?
Oh, well, Vikruti is a great Ayurveda song. It's like the Beatles' Tomorrow Never Knows. We stole a bit of their drum riff and it's great with Ayurvedic lyrics.
I sat and listened to that. That was the first one I heard of yours and just laughed. And my daughter comes in, what are you listening to? She's about 14. I said, listen to the words on this song. You're going to just die. So she's just listening and listening. She goes, that's all the stuff you're always telling me. And I was like, see, I'm not the only one preaching that. So it's good 14's stuff.
14's a tough age. I think you need to do another podcast episode on that.
Oh my gosh. I wish I could figure her out. She's my third. So I'm getting better at the 14-year-olds, but yeah. I don't think we'll ever figure them out. They can't figure themselves out either, so it's okay. Well, Jack, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. It's been just fun to chat and learn more about you and what you're up to. And I'm glad that you're serving the world in the way that you are. It's needed.
Right back at you.
Perfect. Well, have a beautiful day, Jack. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Heather.
Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.